This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Time and Room podcast. The best lacrosse podcast in all the galaxy, Dane.
Bigger every week.
All About Lacrosse, featuring my buddy Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7, The Fan of D.C. and NBC Sports Washington. Dane, of course, played at Robert Morris, was a two-time captain there, and he's coached at the D1, D3 level, and he's currently the head coach at St. Andrew's in Potomac. Coach Dane, how's it going, buddy?
It's going, man. It's going well. Beautiful. Weather's starting to turn. I know that you know about that vitamin D.
Yes. So I'm all about that.
Outside. Yeah. So it's good. We just saw each other yesterday, right? Able to get out in the field. And
I know. It was good.
I got your boy up early, man. 9:30.
Dude, the more of that you can do, the better. The more of that you can do.
Go back home and nap for like 2 hours?
Oh, no. Once he's up, he's up. But, man, if he doesn't have like a reason to get up, you know, he's in no rush. And certainly me saying you need to work out, that's not a reason.
Yeah, I know. I left you off that text. I shot him a text, and he was bringing it. He was able to, you know, definitely a little bit of a shock to the goalie he was shooting on. But
I thought he was shooting well because I drove over and said, I want to watch.
No, yeah. He was definitely shooting well. He was shooting on a rising ninth grade goalie, so very good goalie, but just a different level there when it comes to, you know, Division I play.
It was good for everybody. It was good for the kid who's going to be a rising freshman, right?
Yeah,
at St. Andrews. So. Yeah, and it looks like he's going to be a stud. And it was good work for Stevie because, you know, just like having his dad throwing balls and, you know, shoot on, you know, just the net.
It's kind of boring. It's so much fun to shoot on a goalie. You know what I mean? Like as a shooter, it's different, you know, just shooting on an empty net. If you know, you get to see live shots on a goalie. It's always,
it was so
always
cool.
Going to get him up.
And it was good because you did a great job of getting the goalie, getting his work in, but then you also put in some stuff for Stevie to work on, which is great.
Well, it helped that Steven got tired after about like 20 minutes, so I was able to turn around and say, all right, let's do something with our goalie here while Steven recovers.
Yeah, no, it was all good. It was really good. And it was also great to see, frankly, we were out at a local field here and just see – all of the kids out there still getting their soccer training.
Yeah.
You know, a bunch of like adult guys playing their soccer games.
Yeah. I mean, I think there were a couple 7-on-7 football practices going on there.
There was a lot going on.
And so I've been going to that field for, about a month now. And it's looked like that, you know, pretty much every time. But that was what at 9:30 on, you know, on Memorial Day.
You got to like grab your little turf.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you drive past that turf at 2 or 3 o'clock, it's packed.
Yeah, and Steven actually and a couple of his buddies from St. Andrews from the class of 19, they were over there shooting again today. And he said, yeah, you know, packed. And he had to carve out his little area. Luckily, they were able to use that same space.
Yeah. Good, because it's not really built for lacrosse, that field.
So. No, so. But it worked
all
out.
Good.
Yep, it's all good. And we got a big show today. Today we have another special guest. And this one, it's kind of a bummer, but, you know, it is what it is. I think it's a great time to have him on and find out, you know, what's going on. We have the former associate head coach at Furman, Andrew Athens, who you went to school with for a year, Robert Morris.
Yeah, briefly. And like you said, it's bittersweet. It was a hard text to send. You know, certainly, you know, he's been in our thoughts and But it gives him a chance to come on and kind of share the story of kind of what went down and talk about his seniors a little bit and what that's been like the past, you know, couple of weeks. And so obviously read into it a little bit more. I'll be really interested to hear his thoughts. And, you know, unfortunately, he's been part of this, you know, in a couple different ways. You know, was down at Presbyterian at one point in his career as a player, and then as a student coach. And you know, that program in South Carolina folded. I think it was around 2011, and then now obviously Furman folds. So, Andrew's very well respected in the coaching, you know, industry, and he'll land on his feet. He's a great dude. Got a, you know, I know a really solid family down in South Carolina. So, sure, he'll figure it out, but he'll be a fun conversation.
Yeah, it'll be good because, you know, he was the first assistant hired by Richie Meade. Richie's just a legend. Mm-hmm. And he actually had the opportunity recently to coach the Greece national team in the 2018 World Games. So he'll have some good stuff there. But really, you know, we want to hit on what's it been like the last few weeks. I wonder, did these guys see it coming? You know, we kept hearing that, you know, there were going to be some cuts because of this damn virus. And unfortunately, Furman was the first shoe to drop in Division I lacrosse, hopefully the only one.
Yeah, we'll see, right? Our fingers are crossed. And, you know, yeah. I'm sure he's going to tell us all about it. But if you read a little bit into it, kind of what I had said maybe last week, that I wondered if there was some more than just on the surface than what we saw, and looked like they were under some financial constraints, you know, even prior to COVID, and kind of they were reevaluating, you know, everything. So
yeah, there's just a bit. We'll just find out. And then, you know, I already know that one of Stevie's buddies that he played club with has already transferred. I know that at one point, I think you had mentioned, maybe even on the show, that 38 kids were in the portal.
Right.
So hopefully all those kids can find spots somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure Athens, you know, Coach Athens will tell us all about that. I'm sure they're playing a big part, you know, in trying to find these kids homes, and, you know, especially the younger guys, right? They have a lot of eligibility left. And you're a junior, senior, you know, who knows what you're going to do? Are you going to try to graduate and go find somewhere else? But, you know, not an ideal year
to transfer.
Not
a great year to transfer.
No.
When you got all these guys getting their extra years and teams just reloading.
Yeah.
But
it's tough.
If you can play, you could play, and usually they'll find a spot for you somewhere. So Dane and I were kicking this around. I'm not sure if these came out last week or not, but at the time that we recorded the podcast. I think they might have. But
yeah, I think someone might have tweeted at us to actually check them out. You know what I mean? And that was the first I'd ever really heard of them. And then obviously my AD brought them to my attention as well. But you're talking about those guidelines, right?
Yeah, so the National Federation of State High School Association put out guidelines for opening up high school athletics and activities. And, you know, I printed it out, and it's like 17 pages, and it's some of the most outrageous stuff I've ever seen. I don't want to belittle this crisis. This is a serious crisis, and we've lost over 100,000, you know, Americans to this, and it's tragic. There's no denying it, but there's also no denying that 80% of the victims of this thing that have passed, unfortunately, have been over the age of 65. If you're under the age of 50, I believe your infection rate, according to the CDC, is 1 in 6,700. If you're under 25, you got a better chance of being struck by lightning than dying from this thing. And, you know, not to belittle it or to say that it's not an issue. It is, but these guidelines are outrageous, especially for lacrosse, who I think you might know a little bit better than me. There are, what, three different phases? Is that what there is here in this thing?
Well, it's
tiers?
Both, right? There's three phases, and then there is three categories for sports, right? Low risk, moderate risk, and high risk.
Right.
And then within those phases, I think it goes through, like, at phase three, you know, if you're a low-risk sport, you can do everything. I'm just not quoting the guidelines. You can go to NFHS and check out exactly what it says. But, you know, and then basically past phase three, if you're a high-risk sport, assuming everything's back normal, it says you can play your high-risk sports. Well, your high-risk sports happen to be boys lacrosse, wrestling, football, I think competitive cheerleading. I was correct on that one, right? Those are the four that I remember.
I think so.
And then you have your moderate risk sports: basketball, volleyball. Your daughter's involved there.
Baseball, softball,
soccer.
But if
you can play with a mask and then clean the ball in between each point in volleyball,
which is just ridiculous.
Sport. Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. You're so much more educated as far as, you know, and doing the research. I haven't done all the homework that you do, and I just want sports back. And I read this, and I'm like, I know it's based on science, but it doesn't sound like it was based much on, like, practical thoughts of, like, how sports actually operate. And, like, why would you even put this out there? Now, they are guidelines. You don't have to follow them. My worry is that, you know, some ADs will get a hold of them.
They don't know any better. They think they're doing the right thing.
They're just going to, you know, rely on, and to their credit, they're going to rely on what the high school federation is providing them, and they're going to lean on that. And so we'll see. I mean, I just don't know how. I think I joked about this with someone else, but like, I think it was maybe our basketball coach, like, boys basketball is pretty physical.
Yeah.
I always think
it's
about
as physical as it gets. It's skin on skin.
Along came Polly.
Yes.
He's out on the basketball court playing with the guy with his shirt off. I mean, I know right. They have their shirts on playing basketball, but essentially you're, you know,
no, it's the same thing. You're drenched when you're playing basketball.
Drenched
in everybody's
lacrosse,
sweat.
You have a helmet but again, I don't know the science behind the respiratory.
Well, here's the problem, Dane, is that all of these things, look, first of all, they're all done with the right intention, right? Everybody wants to protect people, and that's a given. But also, as I keep saying week after week, the data is coming in, more and more data every day, and this thing is not what we thought it was when they made these guidelines, I guarantee you, 2-3 months ago. Right?
Right.
When they thought that the death rate was 3.4, turns out the CDC just this week reported it at 0.26, right? And, you know, and all the other various stats that we've gone through and about how this just does not affect young people. I mean, this whole idea that we're going to ask kids like to wash the ball. Can you imagine, guys, if a ball goes out of bounds and running over there and scrubbing the ball and then and then throwing it back in play? I mean, give me a break. What are we going to do? We're going to wipe down the guy's gloves in after quarters?
Well, I know if you read the guidelines. Look, I don't want to downplay it at all. Definitely, I mean,
we're just not doing this.
Yeah. It's so tragic kind of what has transpired. But when you look at this document alone by itself, I mean, there's an even document in there. I think they had to go on to detail and describe that you could not wear face coverings and eye coverings in sports. You know what I mean? Like, can you imagine, like, lacrosse helmet comes out with, like, PPE over the eyes and like the mask,
well, it's like the same thing's happening, like even in Major League Baseball, and I think the players have already rejected it largely, and the assumption is that the owners put this out there just to cover their butts legally, but it's kind of the same thing.
Bad.
Well, not even to make them look bad, but just to say that, hey, we care, so we don't want you to do this. But the initial report that the owners put out there was like no high fiving. Players have to sit 6 feet apart from each other in the dugout. Some guys are sitting in the stands. Mm-hmm. No showering. No congregating before and after. I mean, this is just not going to happen. We're just not doing this. We're not doing this as a culture. We're passing on that, okay? It's not happening. It's not happening at the professional level. It's not going to happen at the high school level. My daughter's not going to play volleyball with a mask on. They're not going to wash the ball down after every point. That's just not going to happen. And until we accept that, well, I don't even think we should start.
Right. I think we got to get to a point where we're not worrying about all that stuff anymore, and then we start.
Yeah.
So whenever we can get to that point.
Well, we're getting there really closely.
Yeah. Well, did you watch that? I'm sure you watched the match, the end of the match. Tiger, you know, at the beginning of the golf event, like the guys were like kind of like fist bumping. They were giving little little shoulder bump. And then by the end of the 18 holes, they're like, no, we can't high five. Tiger went in to give a handshake, and they're like, we can't do that.
Yeah, they're just being weird. It was so dumb.
It's so hard, but that's part of sports, right? Is that like camaraderie that, you know, it's such a hard thing to take out of it. So
I'm sorry, we're not doing that. We're not playing sports and not high-fiving each other. We're just not doing that. You know, especially like in volleyball, you know, where like it's like a group hug after every point. I mean, you know, your wife played volleyball. She played Division I level volleyball. It's that way at youth level. And in lacrosse, I mean, are you kidding? You think the guys are going to jump in the air and chest bump each other after goals? And
right.
I mean, it's just going to happen. It should happen.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I totally agree.
So, I know that these – here I have – I don't know if you, yeah, I know that these were done in good faith, but we're just not – we're not doing it. Okay. Dane, I'm going to speak for you. Now listen.
That'll be good. That'll be good in your fire pit.
Yeah, this will go in the fire pit. This is called kindling, okay? We're going to start that. Doing it.
You got to realize I represent a lot of high school kids in this area. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't represent anybody but my three children, and we're not doing that. So, every single person that suffered from this is a tragedy. But, you know, life goes on. It's not without risk. and this is a horrible thing, but it too will pass, and we're not going to... Here's what I reject. The new normal. I reject that. I'm going back to the old normal, right? Regular normal, okay? Right. Just so you know that. And if you don't, we might lose a couple downloads here, Dane.
Okay. I know, we're getting edgy here.
You might lose a couple downloads here, buddy, but just bear with me. I've been doing this a long time. You got to shoot straight.
You earn this platform. I'm just
That's not Dane speaking. That's just me. That's just the wacky radio guy.
I see the smoke coming.
Yeah, you're getting me fired up. But we're just not doing that. So until we get to a point where we feel comfortable high five and let's not even play. I can't. I'm irate that my local pool's not even open. Are you kidding? To be outdoors and go swimming, the chlorine kills like AIDS. It kills everything. I mean, come on. What are we talking about here? I mean, this is just crazy. My daughter's dives year round. Dive season done. Without even one practice. I mean, it's just making me insane what we're doing here.
We're all losing a lot, that's for sure. So hopefully we'll get it back sooner than later. You know, I know your heart's in a good place. Mine is too. I mean, we all want it. We all want to come back and get back to the old normal or new normal or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, the old normal. The regular normal. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. And I'm going to be leading the charge on that, Dane. Don't worry.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
That's fine. All right. When we come back, and again, it's that millisecond here, but we have to disconnect and we have to get our boy in here and Zoom. We're going to talk to our special guest, the associate head coach, the former associate head coach at Furman, Andrew Athens. Don't go anywhere. All right. Welcome back. It's my pleasure to introduce our guest today. I wish under better circumstances, of course, a guy Dane met as a freshman at Robert Morris. I played a year of lacrosse, I think, at Anne Arundel Community College before becoming a two-year captain at Presbyterian College in South Carolina, where he twice led the team in goals scored. He coached there in 2011, graduated with a degree in business administration, then coached for a year at Queens University in Charlotte, North Carolina, where he served as defensive coordinator. Then Richie Meade made him his first hire at Furman University in 2013 when they started their program there at the Division I level. And he was there until just a week ago today, May 19th, 2020, when Furman announced they were dropping baseball and men's lacrosse. Just a devastating day. But he's man enough to come in here and talk about it. And that's Associate Head Coach Andrew Athens. Andrew, welcome, buddy.
EB, thanks for having me. I mean, I appreciate it. And Coach Smith, Dane, I appreciate you having me. And,
of course, man.
Always enjoyed the friendship and in the small stint at Robert Morris together.
Yeah, exactly. I still remember you roaming around the quad, I think in crutches for most of the year, if I remember right. But
oh man, yeah, it was a hard time, man. Icy and a lot of hills, man. That's not what you want to be doing.
Man, so you still enjoyed yourself though. It was all good.
Oh yeah.
What happened? Did you tear your ACL at Robert Morris?
I was at Anne Arundel Community College.
Right.
And, so I played my first year. Second year, I came back to Robert Morris, back to Anne Arundel Community College. And, having a pretty good year. I think it was the second game of the year we were playing Nassau Community College, and had a pretty good game. And I was like, man, this is going to be a great year, man. I can't wait. The next game, we played Mercyhurst Northeast. And like probably 5 minutes into the game, I'm running with the ball and just made a bad step and tore my right ACL. And so all the recruiting and all that kind of stuff was a bizarre journey. And then, Bear Davis at Robert Morris was like, hey, man, like, we know about you. We know what the deal is. Like, we want to try to get you. And so anyway, it all worked out. I ended up going to Robert Morris University and was out pretty much the whole fall. And, getting back and rehabbing and doing all this stuff. And then, when the spring came, it was like, hey, I'm starting to get back, starting to play decent. And then we were going to scrimmage Notre Dame. It was literally like that practice. I want to say it was like the Friday before that Notre Dame, and I was playing defense on a guy, and someone slid and tore my other ACL, my left ACL. So it was So then after that, it was like the crazy journey of being up there. But no, I mean, Robert Morris was great, man. I enjoyed it. I mean, having two torn ACLs was not enjoyable.
Right,
especially in Pittsburgh. Right, I actually remember that first scrimmage. That was my first college scrimmage ever because Andrew came in as a sophomore when I was a freshman. That's when we had Will Yeatman, and I remember that he was a lefty attackman that ended up going to the NFL, I think, and playing as an offensive lineman.
Yeah, he was ginormous. He was like 6'6" or something.
Yeah, I never remember going through the through the handshake line. And I was like, I don't know if I can play college lacrosse anymore. If they're all going to be built like this guy, I might be in for it. But luckily, they got a little bit smaller, and I don't know if my hands got maybe a little bit bigger. But I'm still,
so, I don't know, man. You got in the weight room, man. Rob Morse had some pretty, you know, there were some diesel dudes, you know.
Exactly.
I don't know if I was one of them, but, you know, there was.
You were one of the better looking guys. I mean, I know this thing's audio only, but Coach Athens, you know, he used to roam campus. I was glad he's only there for a year. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Yeah, you had to hide your girlfriend.
Yeah, there was in college. Yeah, there was a band called Sorry About Your Daughter that was super popular. I thought that was one of the great band names of all time. All right, so you go from Robert Morris, and then you just decide
That's why I had to leave.
Right, right. Bad rep. So what happened then? How did you end up at Presbyterian then?
So. You know, it's crazy. So I always look back on it, and obviously, look, Rob Morris was, I mean, the guys that I've met there, and, you know, I'm really close with Coach McMahon, who's there now, and actually Rob Morasti, who coached there, and, you know, Dane, who coached there, and, you know, like, I mean, awesome. I mean, great, you know, what a great spot, and just a lot of great people that I met there. You know, obviously, having two torn ACLs kind of puts you in a different mindset a little bit. And, you know, I knew I always did want to be down south. I was always intrigued with that. So my little brother, how it turns out to be. So he went down there the first year. So when I went to Robert Morris, he went to Presbyterian College when they first made the transition from Division II to Division I. And he was down there. And, you know, again, I think it really was one of those factors where I like, hey, I always wanted to play with my brother again. You know, we played through high school together. You know, financially it worked out for my family and things like that. It was just, you know, it was easier. So like, hey, my parents could come and watch us both. And, you know, those were kind of like the biggest, you know, factors. And that's kind of how I ended up finding my way down there. But my little brother recruited me, down to press. So I followed my little brother, man. I always joke about it. So he gives me a hard time, but, and he played goalie, at Presbyterian. He was a 4-year starter there. And, you know, he was actually pretty good player.
And you went in there.
We ended up playing you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You guys
think about that, Eric. So yeah. he left and then we came down to South Carolina. I remember we bussed to South Carolina from Pittsburgh for spring break to give you an idea of the budget back then. But,
right.
I remember that. That's kind of crazy how things play
and then
out.
You stepped in right away, even though you're coming off two torn ACLs and you led the team in goals.
Yeah, so I came. So overall, I can't remember that first year. I think I did the first year. I mean, really, it was one of those things. I mean, it's really mental. I mean, obviously, being in coaching, you encounter other guys doing these things, and to be honest, it's kind of nice to have gone through it, where you really kind of have an understanding of what's going on, and really, it was just a big mental piece of like, hey, listen, man, like you're gonna be fine, like you don't need to baby it. You don't need to think about it. And you got to play. Once you kind of get to that mindset, I think, I think you can overcome a lot and be pretty good. And I definitely think I'll never forget. It was like, we went and played Maryland. I joke about this. We played Maryland my first game at Presbyterian College. And, you know, obviously they're pretty good, but Brian Farrell, I don't know if you guys know him at all. Mm-hmm. Or, he's the head coach at Boys Latin, now and a good friend of mine, but, you know, I'll never forget, there's like a ground ball and I'm like, you know, I'm running full speed for it. And Brian Farrell's like 6'4". I mean, he's a big freaking dude, right? Like he's huge. And I thought, I was like, he blew by me. It was like 5, 6, 7, 8 yards. And he's like getting the ball and running down the field and like scoring. I was like, holy smokes. Like everybody's so fast. I felt like Ricky Bobby, you know,
right.
Ricky Bobby. Like, oh, what were those things? You know, like, I was like, holy so it was definitely a journey getting back, but, you know, I felt like, you know, really after my last year, you know, I took off all my, you know, I didn't have knee braces, didn't have anything. And just really, you know, I thought I was starting to play pretty well. And, you know, I think having that, you know, made me change my game. You know, I changed my game. I had to be a little bit bigger and stronger, kind of run into you and, you know, kind of separate and, you know, work on my shot a little bit more. So, My game changed a lot, but it was it was good, man. It was good. I enjoyed the journey. It wasn't easy, but it was definitely an interesting one.
How'd you know you wanted to get in coaching? Because you did that right away, right? While you're still finishing up,
I was like, So I was a like an intern. So my senior year, you had to do like an internship and things like that for the school to graduate. So, you know, like the liberal arts, most of those schools, I don't know, if, you know, like did Robert Morris, did they have a, do you have to do an internship or anything? Was that mandatory?
No, I don't think so.
not that I knew of.
What are you trying to say over there, Dane?
I painted some lines in Coriopolis. I think that's about all I did.
So I did that. I kind of just worked with our staff a little bit and like, I was still playing at the time and just, kind of doing some odds and ends for those guys and just being around them and just seeing how does it kind of all work? You know, like, when you're a player, sometimes you're just like, man, coach, you just like come out to practice, you hang out, you watch like YouTube videos of kids, like, man, it's a great life, And I think, kind of exposed me to a little bit more of the broad horizon that they do.
And did Presbyterian, like, so you was your last year there, was that the last year of their program as well? As far as like you were there 2010 and then what?
Yeah, so
2 years later or a year later?
So my senior year, so I had another year of eligibility due to the my ACL stuff. So yeah. I stayed and played and just with the transfer stuff, there was some credits that I actually had to fight to like get them to accept and things like that. But anyway, like I had another year anyway to kind of finish up all the credits. So I ended up staying just playing and obviously my senior year had a pretty light load. So I could just play, which probably helped in scoring a couple goals, not being
right.
overburdened with school. But it's a interesting path that went there, so
right. And not a lot of people know Presbyterian. I mean, kids nowadays probably didn't even know they had a program, right? Basically it was it was there, kind of flash in the pan. It was what, 4 years, 5 years, how many years?
Yeah, it was 4 years. So my little brother started the Division I piece and finished it. So we actually graduated together and thought we were like twins. I'm like, no, man, I'm the better looking, cooler, older brother. what do you mean? So it was interesting. We actually got cut like mid season too. So, they came in and obviously and said, hey, look, like it's done. So I had some experience with, getting a program cut. So, obviously playing wise, like, hey, I know I'm going to be able to finish. So, that's a good piece. But again, it's kind of like, you don't have that team, right? Like Dane and these guys can cheer for, hey, like my squad,
right.
That's a tough piece, for it. And really, again, I felt bad for all the guys that were younger that kind of were like, okay, you get stuck in that, hey, do I go somewhere? Do I stay here? And really it hurts the guys that are rising seniors. Those guys got to kind of make a really hard decision of like, what do I do?
So how do you end up then at Furman? Because you were Richie's first hire, correct?
Correct, yeah. So, I knew I always had like three paths, right? I was going to, I wanted to either go into the military. My dad's a former Marine. So, the Marine Corps was always like, obviously being around, they would say the greatest fighting force probably ever. Those guys are pretty, they love it. So, I was around that a lot of my life. So I thought, that would be a one path, being a police officer. So when I graduated, I was in a couple talks with a few, I was in Maryland at the time and then coaching, and I always wanted to coach. It's just like, to be candid with you, I met my wife down at Presbyterian. We're both business majors and, we ended up, okay, listen, I don't know if I'm getting anything better than this. So like, she's off the chain. So anyway, I need a job that actually like pays money. I can't like sleep on my buddy's couch or whatever. I like have, I have a little bit more responsibility. So anyway, so Queens actually it was Jacob Baxter who's, running around there. I'm sure you guys run into him a good bit. Who's awesome, but he left, went to Jacksonville. So Queens University of Charlotte opened up. Coach Fritz hired me, got to get in, and it was a great, it was a great situation for us. And again, it was, it was down south, it was close to my wife's family, and it was a good deal. So went there, and then we had a pretty successful year. And Coach Mee got the job at Furman, and called me because I had talked with him quite a bit throughout the course of it, and he was actually one of my recommendations for Queens. and you know, just spent a lot of time with him. And again, he wasn't coaching at the time, so he would, you know, he had a lot more time to spend with me, and you know, whatever he saw in me, I guess was good. And yeah, so it was an interesting situation. So he gets hired, hires me. He's still at the Naval Academy, so he's going to come down the spring, and it's the fall. So I go in, I'm like the first guy at Furman, so I'm, you know, like meeting people and trying to figure out the landscape. I had like a little closet that was my office. I think it was like a compliance closet, and that's where I, you know, did a lot of my, you know, a lot of my work. So that's kind of the path. So I was kind of the first guy on the beach, you know, and you know, had people coming down and doing tours and, you know, getting people interested in Furman, and Coach Meade was finishing up all his stuff, and then he moved down in the spring, and we got rolling together.
Did they have a big club program at that time? Like, what was the build up to it?
No, they didn't. They really didn't. So they had a pretty good club team, you know, like in the 80s, 90s, where they had it. Really, you know, there was no club team. You know, there really wasn't. There wasn't. I don't even think there was a lacrosse ball at Furman anymore. Mm. You know, like type of thing. So we were really building from the ground up. There was a couple guys that really helped us. There was a kid that played baseball at Boys Latin. His name's Jimmy Peacock. He's a politician now. He's a you know, trying to be a big shot, and he was great. Mm. I mean, he like hosted our guys and stuff, and he came to our office like, hey, I you know, I know what lacrosse is, and da da da. I'm like, hey, you're in. Like, we need your help. So he actually helped us a ton that first year, just kind of like being a student, because we didn't have anybody, you know, anybody on campus at that time.
And what's that like? I mean, obviously, starting a program. I mean, you know, it's happened a few times now over the past few years, whether it's Utah or other programs trying to get in the mix. And, you know, obviously we're hoping that it keeps going that way. But obviously with the financial implications, you know, it doesn't look like that might be the case. But just talk about the difficulties of growing a program, because even when you came to Robert Morris, it was probably what, only the fourth year of the program. And it really takes, you know, you guys are just into your fifth year now. It really takes that long, if not a little bit longer, to really get things going.
No doubt. So it's interesting. Like, obviously I played for a relatively startup program with Presbyterian, right? I played with a relatively, you know, a little bit further down the road, Robert Morris, but was still in its infant, you know, stages. Mm-hmm. So I've always been a part of that. It's always been really intriguing to me. I mean, you know, I built the, you know, helped build the Greek national team, you know, in 2018, you know, to go to the World Games. You know, that was a, you know, again, kind of a building process, but Furman's interesting. I mean, like, you know, it's, again, there's not much going on with lacrosse. Like, no one knows about it really. And it's really like, hey, you're the ambassador for this and how you spread it. And I think it's really a process of, hey, you don't have history. You don't have, you know, a lot of people even understanding what's going on. I think that's the first step of just getting people excited about it. And again, like saying like, hey, listen, like, you know, you're going to build the history here. You're going to, you know, you're going to be like Lewis and Clark, man. Like, you don't know what it's going to look like, you know, type of thing. And you know, kind of selling that dream a little bit of being part of something new and unique. And, you know, it's hard, man. Like, there's no ifs or buts about it. I mean, it's a difficult process of, you know, getting guys. And you got to get lucky, man. I mean, some of it's like you just got to get lucky and, you know, get a couple good guys in there. But, you know, just like building the culture. Because, again, the majority of the kids that are coming in are all freshmen, and it's like, hey, you gotta teach them what it's all about. And that's hard. There's no one there saying like, hey man, don't do that. Like, hey, we're playing, you know, listen, Duke and Carolina and all, you know, all these guys are really, really good. And you know, you can't kind of, you know, burn the candle at both ends and things like that, and figuring out, you know, what it means to be a Division I lacrosse player, you know, whatever level it is. But, you know, in this case, you know, Furman being Division I, I mean, it was, you know, it's tough. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of struggles in that. And again, I think it's just like, hey, can you go through some of those growing pains and hang on? And I think, you know, our last, you know, that first class that graduated, you know, those dudes were all tough. I mean, those dudes are all, I'm really close with all of them. I mean, those dudes, you know, they went through it all, right? Like they got beat up. I mean, a lot of those guys didn't make it, and, you know, the cream rises to the top, I guess, you know, as they would say. And, you know, those guys that made it through are really, you know, they were good, man. They're battle hardened, and they played their ass off, and, you know, had a pretty good year, you know, their senior year. So
how many years then did you have to build up before? So you get hired what, in 13? Is that right? And then when is your first year? Is it 15?
14. So 14. Originally we were going to do that model of like, hey, let's get a year to like build a team, which is probably a pretty smart way to go. With just how we viewed it and looked at it, it was like, hey, listen, we let's just get going with this and go get thrown into the fire here. Cause you know, it's going to be hard to sell guys. You know, there's no graduate programs at Furman or anything like that. So it's all undergraduate. It's like, hey, we got to really, you know, we got to get these guys in here and let's make them play. Cause it's going to be hard to sell.
So how many freshmen did you have?
So we had like 60, we had 60 guys overall. I think we had like 4 or 5 transfers. So, you know, what is that? 55. You know, freshmen. So it was wild, man. It was. I mean, it was a lot of like.
It's like recruiting the Navy, right? You just bring it up.
Just a ton of guys. The boatloads, man. We needed them. I mean, you know, I remember the first weekend, all the phone calls. That was classic.
Yeah.
You know, that was great. But it's tough, man. I mean, it's tough. I mean, I think it's like the dream of it. A lot of guys came like, man, this is really, really hard. I think I'm going to do something else, which, you know, again, it's fine. It's just like, hey, you know, like we're pretty honest. Like this is, you know, this is going to be tough. Right. So,
yeah. So thinning of the herd there. And then by, I don't know, when do you feel like you really started to feel comfortable and got into a rhythm? But your third or fourth year, maybe?
Yeah, the third, like that third and fourth year were pretty good. Kind of like what Dane was saying. I mean, you probably need, you know, really over, like you need 6 years, you know, to really start to kind of like evaluate and have a couple like alumni and things like that. You know, and again, I think, you know, everybody's past a little different. Like, I mean, Richmond did a hell of a job. They started, you know, they really, you know, to be honest, like they had a transfer from, you know, Syracuse. We had a transfer from Syracuse, you know, their guy, you know, our guy did a good job, but their guy was extraordinary and, you know, did a hell of a job for him. And, you know, they got a couple guys that really did a good job for him. And look, at the end of the day, like they got a great seed in the tournament and they made it, you know, like, and really shot him off the map. And, you know, they did a good job. And, you know, we definitely, you know, had some battles in there, but it's, yeah, you know, that fourth year is usually probably one of your better years where you got all those guys, but, you know, that have all played and they've played a bunch. And then, you know, it's tough cause you got all those guys playing, they all leave. And then that fifth year is usually like, hey, you know, you got to kind of replace a huge, you know, senior class that are all like tough dudes for the most part. And then it's kind of like building off from mm-hmm. there, you know.
How much is that too? You mentioned like Richmond. I'd just be curious to hear your thoughts. Everyone wants to see lacrosse like grow in the South. You know what I mean? Like everyone wants, everyone talk about Jacksonville and obviously being down at the beach and everything like that. But, you know, it really hasn't grown that much. You know what I mean? As far as at the Division I level, right. Just like recruiting down there. You know, was that difficult? Was it hard to sell? You know, and I don't know exactly where Furman is, but just in general, like, you know, lacrosse is growing obviously in the South, but you guys are still a lot. I know I remember seeing the recruiting circuit. You're still looking at Maryland and, you know, some of those hotbed areas.
Yeah. I mean, you got to, right? Like you gotta recruit Florida. You gotta recruit Texas. You gotta recruit Georgia, but you gotta be there. But you know, the tough thing is that there's obviously a ton of very good players, you know, in Maryland, in Boston, in Connecticut, in New York, you know, like, I mean, there, you know, there's endless places and it's like, hey, you got to kind of, you know, look at some of those guys as well. And I think it's really just, you know, it's tough, you know, like some of those guys, it's like, hey, you got to pass like 20 schools before you get down to Furman. Right. So right. It's like, you know, and there's a lot of guys and the other thing is just the visits, you know, I thought that was like one of the hardest things. I mean, you know, geographically, you know, it was just, you know, you're not by, you know, like, hey, some of the Atlanta guys, it was easy, but anybody else, I mean, it was really, you know, really a trek. And it's like, hey, if I'm going to, you know, drive or, you know, spend 2 days, you know, coming from Florida or Texas, like, hey, you can still fly to, you know, Philly, you can still fly to Maryland, you still fly to New York, you know what I mean? So it's like, you're still kind of like, you know, for the visit wise, I thought that was always, you know, a hurdle just kind of going through some of those, you know, some of those things of figuring out how to get guys down. And again, sometimes it was just the time, like a guy wants to come, wants to visit. He's getting hounded by, you know, he's from Philly and he gets hounded by Villanova. And it's like, hey, I'm going to Nova. I already visited. And it's like, all right, you know, on to the next one. But I think you do. I mean, I think Georgia, I think Charlotte's, you know, Atlanta area, Charlotte area is really, you know, really, really good. I mean, I think Dallas is really good. I mean, I think Texas has got, you know, especially Houston area, you know, Dallas, Florida. I mean, Florida's got a bunch of guys. I think it's just sometimes it's like, you know, some of those dudes don't want to leave. You know what I mean? Right. It's just like, hey, I'd rather just go to Florida State and, you know, and hang out, and then go to Furman and, play Division One. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, get
crushed. Work really hard to be held accountable. That doesn't sound
right.
Right.
Yeah, that's...
Sounds awful.
So talk about what this year was like, how it was unfolding before all, you know, the pandemic and everything, and the season's unfolding. And then do you sort of, you know, do you see like writing on the wall? Do you have a sense that there's like budget issues and that, you know, we might be in jeopardy here? Just talk about how the season was unfolding, sort of how you guys were doing. And then if you saw any of the writing on the wall.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's writing on the wall. I didn't think, you know, I'm sure no one really thought to that extent, right? But I, the season was good, right? Like we played a hell of a schedule. I mean, unfortunately, our last three games before the pandemic hit were, you know, Duke, Carolina, and Penn State, which, I mean, they're good, man. Like we ended with Penn State. I mean, Penn State's ridiculous. Like they're like, you know, you give them the ball every time. They got a phenomenal faceoff guy. And they're going to score. You know, it's like, you're just like, oh my God. Like, you know, hopefully like a guy drops the ball or something, but right. You know, unfortunately they don't really do that. But, you know, so, you know, it was good. I did feel right. Like I will say, like, we had an incredible group of seniors. I thought they did a hell of a job leading, you know, and again, how we play and just the meshing of guys and trying to figure it all out. Like it took us a little bit longer, but I felt like after Penn State, we were really hitting on kind of all those cylinders. You know, again, you could say whatever you want at this point, right? But I truly believed like our guys never wavered, right? Like there was no like, oh my gosh, like we lost, and there was like this dip. It was like, hey, we get back to work. You know, like we're back at it. There was, you know, guys weren't complaining, and I give that a lot of credit to the seniors. I mean, there was you know, that senior class. You know, Alec Van Bovenkamp, who's going to Ohio State now for his fifth year. Willow Gray, who's actually in D.C. now, he's trying to run the political life, and you know, a guy like Jack Schleicher, who played like every position on the field and just was the toughest guy. He doesn't know I'm going to try to go into business. I mean, he's like the smartest guy you'll ever meet. I'm going to go into business with him. He doesn't know that yet, and I'm just gonna let him do his thing and somehow hook my
right. Give him some seed money. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, all right, man, let's do this. Here's a car. Go.
Right.
But just, you know, those guys like Brandon Banks, another one. I mean, they just came to work. They played their ass off. And again, going into, we were playing Air Force. We were actually flying out the Air Force that weekend. And you know, I thought we felt confident. And I don't know if you guys look at like, you know, like stats or patterns or anything like that. But Air Force had like win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, you know, win. And then they're playing Furman, and it's like, hey, you know, this pattern's probably just, you know, like, you know, looking mm-hmm. that way. So, you know, so we're all fired up. I think we're prepared to go out there and play our conference, and I'm sure all of our guys are like, hey, listen, we want to play Penn State, Carolina, and Duke again, and you know, and in this. So I think they're fired up, and then obviously all the pandemic stuff. So we first hear like, hey, like the Air Force has a huge stadium. They're like, yeah, they're not gonna let anybody in, like, you know, all this stuff. And it's like, oh man, that's not too good. And then literally like that Friday, we're like, you know, or actually it's just Thursday night. It's like, hey, you guys aren't going. So we kind of get everybody together, kind of discuss it. And then we end up sending everybody home. It kind of starts that, you know, cancelization of everything. You know, look, the NBA, I don't know if you guys saw that, but it was like, holy smokes, right. Like, you know, the NBA's canceling, it's probably going to be, pretty tough. So anyway, you know, kind of go through that, send everybody home. And then it was obviously like just a bizarre, you know, like, hey, look, you're, you know, like we conferenced everybody, made sure everybody got home, and we did all the stuff, kind of talked to everybody, kept everybody engaged. You know, we were doing regular conference calls that I was set up. I don't even know how the heck I set it up, but like all the guys to call in, it was a nightmare. And then Zoom became like a thing. So we're having Zoom calls with all of our guys, and, you know, we did exit meetings, and, you know, Furman was having us do a bunch of different things, and, you know, just to stay engaged. And, you know, so it was just a weird time, right? So I don't know if you felt like, hey, this is just a bizarre time, or you did feel some of the writing on the wall. But, you know, I knew there was some restructuring. I mean, we have a new AD and things like that. So, you know,
when was he hired? This guy's the villain now. He's my villain.
I don't, you know, listen, like,
go get Andrew in hot water here.
It's I don't know how, you know, like who is the driving factor behind it. I mean, I obviously look like some, you know, they hired this coronavirus, task force, and that, you know, they kind of concluded that like, hey, for some reason, Furman lacrosse and Furman baseball was not the answer. So, I don't know. And I don't know how much he was, he was involved in getting these and make some decisions or what. But
when did you hear the first rumbling that you guys might actually be in jeopardy? They might cut something.
Yeah. So there was not really too much rumbling, man. They kept it pretty tight. And then Monday, last Monday,
mm-hmm.
It was just like, we had a regular athletic department meeting and it was like, hey, kind of standard stuff. And then right after Coach Mead calls me, he's like, hey, we got to go to Furman. And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, oh man, this is going to be, that's not good, type of thing. And we actually went to pick up Coach Mead and we drove in together. And again, like the crazy part was, we saw like the baseball staff in there. And then obviously we know how that turned out for those guys. And, they were like, those guys were like those guys did everything, man. Those guys were awesome. I mean, good dudes. And it's like, they're telling me like, hey, the last time Furman baseball didn't have a season was during World War II. Like, gap. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's, it's crazy. I mean, look, I knew like, hey, listen, if there was a, we were kind of the infant person, around. I mean, we don't have all the, all the alumni, all the deep roots and things like that. So I knew that was, not beneficial towards us. But
what'd they say to you when you get in there? What how's the meeting go down?
Yeah, it's just like, hey man, we're cutting the program, and I will say, listen, AD was very, gracious and with class, and it was like, he was just saying stuff. It's like, in my mind, it's like, hey, look, just shoot me already, man. We know, let's hang me. But listen, it was tough, man. I mean, it's just like you go through it and they just say, hey, listen, we're discontinuing that, and like, it's done. Pretty
did
much.
He say why? Did he say, look, we got a budget here. This virus killed us. Like,
yeah, I mean, we didn't get really into it. I mean, like, and you can come up or say whatever you want. Really, at the point, it's like, look, the decision's been made, and it's like, look, to be honest, I don't know what everybody else did. I mean, I didn't get into the whole thing of like why and this is da da da. I just was like, listen, I got it. This is not what you guys are doing, and let's tell our guys. So we kind of had a quick turnaround to get our team on a Zoom call and tell those guys, and then try to tell like our incoming 20 class. And it's just
how'd the guys take it? That's just brutal, right? They had to be floored, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, like, and that was my biggest thing. It's just like, look, I'll figure it out. Look, I can do a billion things. Like, I'm not worried about like, oh my God, like, I'm going to be like homeless or whatever. But I felt really bad for the guys because there's so many relationships and there's so many, there's just so many friendships that you have. And again, it's just kind of like, it's kind of getting dismembered a little bit. And all the guys that did like that first class, like, these guys took the bullets for everybody getting it going, and it's like those guys, now don't have anything to kind of, look back on and be like, man, we started this thing. And, I think it was just at its tip, it's tough, but, it's tough.
What was Coach Mead's reaction? Cause obviously, I mean, he came down there to build something, And, I know you don't want to speak for him, but obviously he's got a pretty intense background in the sport. And for something to be pulled away from like that, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was with him since day one, and it's like, look, we spent a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of hours of just building it, and hustling and trying to make it all go. And obviously it's frustrating for him. I think he was told some things, early on, and I don't know if those, obviously a lot of those, kind of things didn't, he probably went down to Furman and do all that if he obviously knew, I don't think anybody would have, obviously, but I think he just, it's tough. And again, he's got class, and he's a good dude, man. I mean, he is just class act, and kind of the same deal of let's help our guys, let's do this. And again, I think obviously he's at kind of the back end of his career. I know his contract's still pretty I think he's got a couple years left on that, so they gotta they'll have to figure out all that. I mean, I'm just like a rock collector, I just go, I'm just like the guy that hammers rocks, and up and moves them around. So, it's like, hey, you spent, however long, 7 years that we spent building it and putting it all together. And, To some extent, I feel for all these people that got affected, that had small businesses. You know, just to put it all in perspective for me, it's like, man, some of these people dedicate their, you know, their own money, their own time, you know, all this stuff, and spent 25 years building this business, and it's finally starting to rock and roll, and then it's like, boom, like,
right.
You know, you're getting crushed, and I just, you know, my heart goes out to all those, and not only just in the United States, I mean, all over the world. So, I mean, it's tough, man. I mean, I feel bad for those people, but you know, at the end of the day, I mean, my main focus was our guys, right? Like our guys, our 20s, and just, you know, being there for them and getting them hooked up and trying to find, you know, homes for them and what makes sense and trying to direct them in a path that makes sense for them and their family. And, you know, to be honest, that's what I've been doing up until this day. I mean, I've been on the phone nonstop, you know, with coaches and I will say this, I mean, the lacrosse community is unbelievable. I mean, they are just, it is such a cool, I mean, people, you would be amazed. And I'm pretty private in like the fact that, hey, look, like people are saying different things, but it's like, you know, just from, you know, the parents, the players, and just some of the, like, you know, some of the notes I got from guys, it's like, man, I didn't think you even listened to a single thing I said for, you know, 4 years. And this guy's like, hey, you really, you know, made an impact and things like that. So, I mean, it's really special. And then just like all, like, I mean, I could probably say almost, there's someone from almost every Division I staff that had reached out, and then not only all the Division II and Division III and high school coaches. I mean, like Dane was one of the guys. I'm like, hey man, I love you, and dude, I'm sorry, man. Yeah, it's tough, you know, like type of deal. I mean, so it was just unbelievable to see, and just people reach out and be like, hey, listen, this is opened up. If you're interested, like, you know, I know about you, and you know, people that I haven't even, you know, either spent a few, you know, few moments with that were reaching out and just, you know, talking to me. So I just, it's amazing how cool the, you know, being part of the lacrosse community is and being part of that. It's really special.
And those
coaches too, probably, you know, I mean, it is, it's an amazing, it's like such a tight knit family. Everyone's kind of looking out for each other. I'm sure all these coaches, they want to improve their teams, but I'm sure deep down too, a lot of these guys want to find these kids home so they can keep playing the sport. You know what I mean? Whether it's at the Division I, two or three level. I mean, all these kids, would you have, I mean, I don't know what your roster size was, but I think we talked about it before, what, 38 guys you had in the portal. So, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, I'm trying to find like three or four 21s homes, and I was going to call you about one of them. And then, there goes that call.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's all good. Well, I'll call you at your next spot. I know that'll be a good one too. But I can't imagine what that's like, you know, over the past couple of weeks. Probably been a little bit of fun, right? I'd imagine.
Well, it's like it's cool. It's like, you know, my role has been, you know, I've always been on the other side of it, really, mm-hmm. kind of talking to guys and, you know, kind of figuring it out. Now I'm like that guy, you know, I'm like the high school coach saying, like, listen, dude, this guy, you know, now
you're like,
I know
you got to take him. You got to take him.
Yeah. It's like, listen, like you do what you want. Like, and obviously I know the game, and I get the guys, and I know everything to say. So they probably like hate me, but it's just like, listen, like, this guy's a no-brainer, you know, like literally, like, right. This dude, you got to take him, you know. And again, like, if they have the spine, it all works out great. But it's definitely been enjoyable, and just kind of connecting with guys, and again, just a different angle a little bit, and you know, just trying to help our guys out and help programs. I mean, obviously I got a ton of friends throughout the coaching world. It's like, look, like, you do what you want, man, but you know, this guy is pretty, you know, pretty good.
Do you feel like they're carving out space for the guys, like, because they love the sport and they want the guys to be able to continue, or a guy saying, hey, listen, I don't really have room, but for you and the program, I'll carve out a space?
Yeah, I think everybody's different, right? Like, I think there's some of, like, you know, the COVID-19 effect, where it's like, yo, we had a 20, he was coming, and now, like, his parents don't have, you know, like, he's got to go a different route, right? Like, he's got to figure something else out. So I think there's some of that stuff, or whatever the case is. I think there's some of that. I think there's guys, you know, the transfer portal has changed things, where guys just like leaving and, hey, I think I can, you know, I can go to, you know, LSU if I jump in the portal, you know, someone's going to pick me up type of thing. So, I don't know. I think everybody's different. I mean, I think there is some more, and I think some of the schools are like saying, hey, listen, you can take a couple more guys because, look, like, you know, we've lost some of our students. I don't know what you guys probably know better than me, but like the percentage of kids coming back in school, you know, their admissions spots are, you know, just overall as a schools, I think are struggling.
Enrollment's dropping. Yeah.
So I don't know what the percentage of that is, but I know there's some of that. And again, I think there is some, like, hey, we can't really take a guy, but he's really good, and we want to try to help out. You know, I think there's some of that as well. So I think everybody's got a different angle, to it. But I think at the end of the day, like some of those guys too are like, hey, listen, like we need a close defenseman. Like, who do you got? Or, hey, we need we need a midfielder. Who do you got, type of thing. And, it's easier. I think, some of it is like, obviously in the recruiting thing, you're going through all these people. And I think it's like, some of the Furman guys, it's like a no brainer. It's like, hey, they're probably pretty smart. Hey, look, Furman's an expensive school. And I think it's like, hey, look, like they've already did a lot of the vetting process. And now it's just like, hey, you can go in and kind of pick a few of those guys. So it's actually probably for your time, it's usually probably a pretty rewarding result.
And it's less guessing, right? I mean, not that there's guessing in recruiting, but I always talk to our guys too. Like, when you have film on a kid that's in college, you know what he looks like when he's in college, where it's different, as a high school recruit, you're trying to get recruited. And it's like, that kid looked good against this club team, but was that club team any good? Or was that kid that was guarding him any good? Was the goalie any good? So, you got all this film and you guys just played, like you mentioned, Penn State, Duke, and UNC. They throw on the film and they can see those guys compete, at least a lot of them. You know what I mean? So that, I'm sure that helps.
No doubt. And playing against them. I mean, we had a couple guys like, one of our attackmen had 4 goals against Carolina. And they're like, who's this guy? What's going on? So some of that helps where it's like, hey, look, it's kind of firsthand. And like, there's a guy, Tucker Brown, and he's kind of been like all over the place, but it's like, this guy is off the chain. Like, he's 6'3", he can shake. He's got a cannon. Like, I don't know what his deal is, but you look at his stuff. It's like, hey, he scored 2 versus Penn State, scored 3 against Carolina. It's like, look, like, I don't know what you want. So, so I know just like going, he was just kind of one of the most recent guys I'm talking to, but all those guys, I mean, they've played all those guys, played at a really high level against really good teams. And, you can kind of figure it out from there. So it is definitely a little bit different from, like you said, I mean, like, hey, what league are you playing in and who's this? And that, be honest, going back to the South, like, that's the hard part of like, hey, this guy had 7 million goals, but it's like, what does this look like, type of thing. So there's definitely some guessing in that, but
yeah.
So what's next for you, Coach? Where are you in all of this? I mean, it happened kind of late. It's a weird time. Where do you envision yourself?
Yeah, EB, that is a heck of a question, man. That is a heck of a question. If I knew, I would tell you. I might just have to join this podcast, man.
Yeah, why not, man?
Listen,
I think my Eric's been looking to fire me anyways.
Never.
Man, I don't know. I mean, I think it's, when things like this happen, I think the biggest thing is like, listen, you don't make decisions. My dad always talked about, hey, there's like peaks and valleys. You never make like crucial decisions when you're in the valley, right? So you got to kind of like regroup, kind of figure it out a little bit. And I think, my initial reaction was like, well, I'm just going to get out of coaching. I'm going to go do something else. And again, I think there's just some of that, like, frustration through that. And I think it's like, I think as time kind of goes on and, all these people reach out, there's a few opportunities out there, lacrosse wise. And I think it's just like, hey, what do I want to do? Do I want to stay in college? I mean, obviously the high school level's got, there's all kinds of stuff that's going on with that. And I don't know, but I think I've made the decision I want to stay in. I want to continue to coach and, again, just being around the lacrosse community and just the impact that, all these guys have made on my life, and just seeing the rewards and just the notes from all kinds of people just saying like, hey, this, you changed my trajectory and things like that. It's like, whoa, like, those things are pretty powerful. So, I don't know. That's a great question. So if anyone's looking for, a good looking, lacrosse guy, I'm available. I'm wide open.
Well, Coach, you said, you might have a job, right? 3K a year.
Yeah, no, we had Ryan Tarafinko on last week and, he said he wants to get into coaching. I offered him an assistant job to run the box, paying for a game. I'll up your salary like $5,000.
Right, we'll have to do that, man.
I'll do a little fundraising. Maybe EB can donate to the St. Andrews coaching fund. But no, the coaching world is it's better with you in it, man. So I'm glad you're going to stay in it, and I'm sure, like I said, you'll land on your feet and one of the better guys in the game, EB, for sure. So we're lucky to have him.
So listen, Coach, how can are you on social media if people want to reach out to you? How can we reach out to Coach Athens?
Absolutely. I'm on Twitter, and my Instagram game is kind of weak, I will say. I didn't get it.
We got to tighten that up.
I got to tighten it up, no question. I need to get on the weights, you know, get on the weights a little bit more, get my shirt off there, out there on the beach, get some snaps,
right?
Get my followers up. But I'm on Twitter, Coach Athens. I got a decent following on Twitter.
Right.
At Coach Athens. And then my Twitter, I don't even know. Or my Instagram, I don't even know what it is, to be honest. That's probably part of the problem.
Here's what you'll do. You go to your Twitter, you'll tweet out your Instagram,
right.
Instagram page. So everyone that's listening now, we'll go give you a follow. So.
Yeah, for
probably
sure.
I got your kids up on your Instagram, right? That's probably what you got on your Instagram.
I have just some random pictures. I didn't know you couldn't put like more than two. You only can put one a day, one picture.
No, you can put whatever.
My little brother's like, no, it's like against the law. Incidentally, like, you're a loser. I'm like, oh, well, I've ruined it.
No, that must pictures. Be the old rules. You can put whatever. Look, if you want followers, you just got to put hot chicks on there. Just put your wife on there or something. You'll be good. That's what it is.
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
All right, we'll get her permission first, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen, Coach, thank you so much. Next time we'll do it under better circumstances. Really appreciate having you on. Of course, that's Coach Dane Smith. You can follow him on Twitter or Instagram at Coach Dane Smith. I'm EB Junkies. Spread the word for us. Thanks again, Coach. Can't wait to do this again next week. For Dane Smith, I'm EB. We will see you next time. Be safe out there, everybody.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.